Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to the show. I have a special guest today on a topic we don't usually talk about, sex and happiness. So now with Valentine's Day coming up, if you heard the astrology show for this month, you know Venus is traveling on through for the whole month. And I thought this would be a pretty appropriate show. So let me tell you a little bit about my guest. Her name is Lori Handlers. She's one of the leading experts when it comes to happiness and intimacy. She's a film producer, a sex educator, an author, and an intimacy coach. You could actually call her a sex and happiness coach. She's got a master's degree in education, a bachelor's degree in psychology and sociology, and she's had quite the lifetime. But today she spends her time making people happy. So let me say good morning to Lori. Good morning, Lori.
Hi, Maria. It's so great to be with you.
Oh, it's great to have you on. You know, I know my daughter refers to you as a modern-day Dr. Ruth who actually has sex.
I do. And the thing when you were introducing me, you said, or when you were introducing the show, you said, we're going to talk about a topic we don't usually talk about. And I didn't start laughing, but I laughed internally because people don't talk about it, and that's the problem.
Well, I think one of the other problems, because you may or may not know, I also do a lot of consulting work with people, especially couples, is couples don't tell each other what their sexual needs are. It's like it's a bad thing, and everybody walks away dissatisfied, and the loss of intimacy begins. And I don't know why that is. It's almost like we're too ashamed to talk about something that's very natural.
Well, the fact is that we are ashamed, and it's because of our training. It depends on our religious upbringing or our parents, how comfortable they were in their own skin, and also schools. We don't learn anything about it. I mean, if I were to rule the world, I would have kids actually really studying their own bodies in seventh grade. So by the time they got to be seniors in high school, they knew what boundaries are. They would know about how their bodies function, and there wouldn't be anything embarrassing about it. And they would, you know, they'd be healthier. They wouldn't grow up like all of our generation.
Absolutely. Well, you know, one of the topics that I find in the news a lot is body shaming and people being uncomfortable with their own body. And now men are also starting to feel the same way, or maybe first verbalizing it for the first time ever.
It's true. So many people are ashamed of their bodies, and there really isn't anything to be ashamed about. Their body is their body, and it's they need it to be alive.
Exactly.
So, and they need sex also to be healthy and functioning, and they need to feel good about themselves. It's another area of self-esteem.
Right. Well, you know, I think you and I are close in age, and I have to tell you a story. I don't think I've ever shared this with anybody since high school. When I was back in high school, we got a substitute teacher one day, and I want to say that it was maybe 10th grade, and she was a tiny little pixie of a woman. Of course, years later, I recognized who she was. It was the singer Joni Mitchell, so she must have been subbing at the time.
And she, oh, my goodness.
And she spent the whole period sat up on the desk like a little imp with her legs crossed, talking to us about sex. Freely, openly.
Wow.
And, you know, that was like 1968 or, you know, 66. I don't remember.
I have to tell you something about her. You may know this because I know that you're into astrology. Joni Mitchell is a triple Scorpio. So there's actually no mistake that she would talk to you about sex for the whole time.
Ah, how interesting.
Sex runs her life.
Well, and what then the problem is? I mean, I can tell you that maybe it's my own intuition or what, but as a, you know, cusp person born on, you know, right at the cusp of Sagittarian Capricorn, to me, and I don't want anybody else to feel insulted, but to me, the men I'm attracted to the most are usually Scorpios. And I can feel them across the room. So if I went up to them and used that old line, what sign are you? I don't. I just say, are you a Scorpio? And that blows them away because there's just something about that energy that really attracts me.
Yeah, it's their sexual energy.
Well, that could be it. I never met a Scorpio I didn't like. Okay, when I travel through Europe and other places, well, I find the islands are very, very sexually inhibited too, because they don't even care for the way Americans dress there. But when I was in Europe, one of the things that amazed me was when you go to a topless or a nude beach, the only men that are acting like idiots looking at women naked are usually American tourists. And what I what I found was a lot of these, you know, the foreigners, the French, the Italians, or whatever, they laugh at us because they just don't get our sexual repression.
Well, you know, we have to look back at the fact that our country was started by Puritans. They were people who were religious fanatics who were kicked out of England, and so. I mean, we just got off to a bad start. to begin with. And Americans, sex is used against us. Like, it's used to sell us our cars. It's used to sell us injections and surgeries and every product under the sun. Madison Avenue has been using sex on us for a very long time. And at the same time, sex education, I mean, we have the highest teen pregnancy rate in the world in terms of the first world, you know, not the third world, not places where you would expect teen pregnancy because people don't have education or they don't have access to birth control or whatever. We have access to education and it's actually blocked. Mm-hmm. It's blocked by church and state. So people have no clue. And so when sex goes into the shadow, like it's suppressed, mm-hmm. it comes out in weird ways. So one of the ways it comes out is that men and women act stupid on a nude beach, or it comes out as predators, like in the church, mm-hmm. you know, with priests having sex with young boys or what have you. I mean, when sex is in the shadow, it has to come out, and it just comes out in distorted, strange, and sometimes very dangerous ways, and sometimes very stupid ways.
Right. Well, I see that a lot. And I got to tell you, looking at these GOP candidates for president, you know, they all, you know, when you look at that, you look at the arguments against Planned Parenthood, contraception for women. Mm. The bottom line is not just controlling women, but these men actually, I believe, feel that women should not enjoy sex. And I think that a lot of that comes from their religious beliefs, you know, of keeping your little woman barefoot and pregnant.
Yes, it does. That's, you know, I don't want to take too many shots at religion. I mean, I could go on for days about it. It's sad, but true. Mm-hmm. That's all. You know the theory about divide and conquer. I mean, that's been a military strategy forever.
Right.
So if we as human beings are divided at the neck, so we're divided, the head and the mental processes and the intellect are valued, and everything below the neck is sin because it's carnal pleasures and whatever people have been taught. Mm-hmm. So we're divided and conquered. We can be controlled by the powers that be when we're in that state. When we wake up, which is my job, to wake people up, to the fact that their body is a temple. Their skin is the largest sensory organ. If we weren't meant to feel pleasure in our bodies, we would have been born in metal or wood or glass.
Right.
Something not with nerve ending. But that's not what we were meant. We were meant to feel everything. And so we have to reclaim our bodies, and we can do that through using sexual energy. I'm not saying to go out and have a rampant sex. I'm saying that our sexual energy is the vital life force, and it needs to be awakened.
Absolutely. I mean, every artist knows that what they're really creating from is their sexual energy. So a lot of times artists will be pretty much just be celibate for a while so they can rechannel that energy into whatever piece they're working on. But when you speak to people about sexual energy as a spiritual energy, they can't make the connection.
Exactly. Exactly. But it really is. And it was meant to be. It's our birthright.
Hey, I'm okay with that one. I don't know. I don't know if you ever saw the movie. And anybody listening, please go over. I know Netflix has it. A few months ago, I watched this movie called Hysteria. Did you ever see it, Lori?
No.
Well, it talks about American women at the turn of the century. And in those days, whenever a woman's needs weren't being met, they said that she was sick, and they called the sickness hysteria.
Mm.
And the movie takes you to where all these rich wives of these obviously sexually not pleasing men start going to this one doctor. And what he actually does is he's masturbating them in the office so that they can have an orgasm to cure their hysteria. And eventually takes on a young doctor to work with him. And this doctor, you know, after a while, he says his hands are getting tired. Okay. So he was the guy, that invented the very first vibrator. So it's really the story of the vibrator.
Right. It's probably one of the oldest electrical inventions. I think the only thing that predates it is either the light bulb or a fan. But
yeah.
The vibrator is one of the oldest known inventions. So I know the story that you're telling. I just didn't see the movie.
Well, you really put it on your list because it's quite entertaining and educational. I was like, wow, who knew this? And obviously, you know, back in those days, oh, what's wrong with your wife? Oh, she's just hysterical. Okay, and it was literally called a disease. A lot of women went into like mental institutions because they were classified as having hysteria. But what was really happening was they were not having orgasms. So how important mm-hmm. is an orgasm?
Mm-hmm. Oh, we haven't come very far. I'm sorry to say we haven't come very far. I look at life as an orgasm. Like I think people should be living orgasmic lives. And I feel it's my job to teach them how to do that so that they're making love to life as they move through their day, move through their month, move through the year.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an interesting way to look at it instead of, you know, people just waking up, going to work, paying bills and coming home. And that's hardly a life that I would like.
Yeah, well, it's not that hard to attain it. It really isn't that hard to attain it, but it really means, I mean, in what I teach people, it's really getting present to what real beauty is around, what feelings and sensations are around, and how to shift them if it's uncomfortable or if we're not in a good place, how to shift it. Like, you know the expression, turn on a dime. Mm. How to turn on a dime using your sexual energy to fuel that and be able to just go, oh, love and life, and love in my life. It's actually possible to go through every day like that, no matter whether you are going to work and paying bills or what have you.
Right.
You can be happy, grateful, blessed, thankful, all of it. And feel like also the other piece is welcoming life like it's an adventure, like it's the unknown. And to me, that's very orgasmic, going into the unknown.
Mm-hmm. No,
for a lot of people, it's not a comfortable place. You know, they're afraid of the unknown. They prefer the known, and that's off.
I know, and I'm sure you hear it all the time, as do I. You know, and it doesn't matter if I'm talking to a male or a female. married people more so than single people for whatever reason. They complain constantly about their sex life, but when I tell them, you know, your husband's not a psychic, you know, you need to tell him what it is you like. If he loves you, he's going to do it. You know what I'm saying? But to expect him to just guess what's going to please you or vice versa, it's just not fair. Okay. It's kind of stupid because you're putting all that pressure on your partner and they don't even know what's happening.
Yeah, people expect, well, because we're so suppressed about talking about it, that we expect if you love me, you would know what I like. And you expect that my moans, which I might or might not make, and my sounds, which I might or might not make. I find that most people don't make enough sound, so that's also part of the problem. Like, their partner doesn't know really what their sounds mean if they are making them, and they don't make enough sound, so the partner has no clue. It's just kind of like a magician pulling a rabbit out of their sleeve. You know, like, oh, got it right. Oh, didn't get it right.
Right.
Oh, this time I got it right. Oh, this time I didn't get it right.
Right. And that just puts more pressure. And I would think that it kind of interrupts the mood if you have to work so hard doing guesswork when you're supposed to be enjoying lovemaking.
Yes. 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 Yes.
You know,
it's very, it's a lot of pressure and it's very difficult.
Well, I'm sure everybody remembers that scene in When Harry Met Sally when they're out to lunch. And she's certainly making her sounds and the women at the next table said, we'll have what she's having.
Exactly. That's a great thing. But she's actually faking it. She's proving to Harry in the movie that she's faking an orgasm and that he says, no one's ever faked an orgasm with me. And she said, yes, they have. And he says, no, they haven't. She says, how do you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then she just goes into it. She goes into that. That's one of the best scenes in a movie ever.
Right.
She goes into it, and the whole restaurant's looking at her, and that woman says, I'll have what she's having. But really, that's so true. People then fake it because they can't be bothered, because they don't want to go there, because the person's not getting it right. And they don't want to tell him. I mean, there's so many reasons behind that. And it's so not necessary. People could just breathe. They can breathe and make sound, and they actually can bring themselves to orgasm because they're breathing and they're oxygenating themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're able to feel. So
right.
If I were going to give a tip today, which here's one, make sound. Because when you make sound, like she was making in the movie, but real, make real sound, that means that you're exhaling. And when you're exhaling, it means you have to inhale. And so when you're making sound, it forces you to oxygenate the cells, and that produces more feeling in your nervous system.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I would think, you know, you don't have to be all screaming unless, of course, you want to. At least let your partner know. And I think it comes down to, you know, and one of the things, of course, that's a specialty of yours is discussing intimacy, but not just sexual intimacy. I mean, if you don't even talk to your partner, honestly, you have no intimacy. And I know that a lot of people are just not honest with their partner.
True. Well, where would they learn that?
I would think from their parents or TV or movies or whatever, because, I mean, I'm sure, you know, if you ever watch a soap opera or any kind of love story, everybody's being dishonest. And that's always sticks out to me while I'm trying to enjoy a show. I say, and again, nobody's being honest with each other. You know, I've always been accused of being brutally honest.
Me too. That's because we're both from New York.
That could be it. That could be it. Or.
And also, we're both Sagittarius.
Right.
So we have to tell the truth. I mean, people said to me, I remember someone saying to me once, how is it that you have any friends? Because <You know? laughs> you're too honest. Like, oh. But I, what you're saying, they don't learn it. People don't learn. The thing is, in school, how much do you use algebra and geometry now?
You don't.
You know, or world literature and history. I mean, seriously. I mean, okay, you probably use history because you do news.
Right. Even though the history I learned in school was all a lie. So, but at least
that's
I
exactly
can
right.
tear it apart.
So we don't learn life skills. We don't learn communication. I, you know, in my classes, I ask people, how many people here know what their boundaries are? Mm-hmm. And people just look at me. They give me the blank stare. I say, well, in your families when you were growing up, raise your hand if your parents used the word boundary. No one raises their hand, mm-hmm. ever.
Right.
No. So if I can't say no and be really clear about no, how is my yes clear? How is my yes a hell yes?
Mm-hmm. Right. So, and I mean, I know so many people that no one takes them seriously because they know that when they say no, it doesn't mean anything. It can be manipulated.
Exactly. So we can just start with that. The two simplest words in the English language, no and yes. I mean, babies hear no or yes to whatever it is. It's the beginning of conditioning. So we don't even know how to say no and yes. So just, that's for starters. So then people trying to have a conversation about sex. I like this. Oh, I like little circles. I like soft touch and slow. I like hard touch and fast. I like nails. I like lips. I like blowing on my skin. I like, people have no vocabulary for that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't, their parents really didn't talk about anything. Look, my parents, I mean, my sister and I think we were the Immaculate Conception.
My parents weren't too far off the mark. All I knew is when my father shut the door between my room and his room and told me to turn up my stereo, I knew. I kind of got the hint of what was happening, and he even picked his favorite music.
I wish I had that. I was not exposed to that. Not at all. Too funny.
Well, you know, my mother was very old-fashioned. She was Sicilian. And I can honestly tell you, up till the day she died, I never saw my mother naked. And when it came to the sex talk, she pushed that off on my father. I mean, he handled it beautifully, but you couldn't talk to her about sex.
Exactly. I had the same thing. Actually, this is good. I'm so happy you said this. When I was in college, my freshman year in college, I was walking on the beach with my father in Long Beach, New York. It was a fall day or something, and or maybe early spring, I don't remember. But anyway, we were walking along the beach, and I said, Pop, I'm going to experience sex soon. I'm going to have sexual intercourse. And my father said, that's great, Laurie. You shouldn't make too big of a thing out of it, and you shouldn't make too small of a thing out of it. It should be something that you enjoy, but it's not the end of the world either way. Mm. It's just, you know, natural, he said.
Right.
And then he said, but you have to be responsible, you know, if you get pregnant, you're going to have to deal with it. Well, we got home and I said to my mother, Pop said it was okay for me to have sex. I shouldn't make it a big deal or too small of a deal. My mother took out every pot and pan in the kitchen and threw it at both of us.
Well, I guess your mother wasn't too keen on you knowing that. Hey, there were a lot of sex talks in Long Beach, New York. I'm sure you know. I spent 20 years in Long Beach too. But you know, I spent some quality time with my 18-year-old granddaughter a couple of weekends ago, and she had a million questions, and not just about sex, about a lot of things. And I always give her quick, simple, direct answers. And she appreciates it. You know, I don't try to avoid the subject. I don't want them growing up inhibited or unhappy. But I don't know how many other people would do that. And when they bring their little young friends around, they're like, wow, I don't have a grandma like this. And
right. Well, no one does.
But, I mean, how much easier would it be? I think my grandmother, who was even more old-fashioned Sicilian than my mother, had a better grip on sex and sexuality than my mother did.
Mm.
You know, because I'll tell you a funny story. When my mother, who was a grown woman with children, my grandmother lived in the apartment above us, and the butcher was always putting the moves on my mother, but my mother was too silly to even understand it. So one day she went up to my grandmother and said to my grandmother, you know what Tony just said to me, who was the butcher? He said to her that today with every duck you buy, you get a goose for free. And my mother didn't even get that. And my 65-year-old grandmother had to explain it to her and tell him. Of course, she said Tony was a pig. But I couldn't understand. You know, I was maybe 10 or 11, and I couldn't understand that my mother didn't get that. So maybe she was one of the original Puritans from Sicily. One of the other topics in America now, which is finally getting a little mainstream coverage, and I was very happy to see, for anybody that watches General Hospital, and I know a lot of you do, including a lot of my men, because you were very glad to hear Dee Wallace on the show, and when she guest starred on it, they are actually taking on breastfeeding in public. Now, here's a show that's been on the air for 52 years, so it's taken them 52 years to get to breastfeeding in public. Now, you know, Lori, every ad you see on TV is all about breast exposure, okay? I hate when men call them fun bags and all the other names they have for them. And I try to remind people that the breasts actually have a purpose. They're to feed your children. And yet, if a woman is breastfeeding in public, all kinds of alarms go off, which brings me back to our lack of knowledge about the physical body, sex, and a woman's breast. What do you think makes that split? Everybody wants, you know, the big breast. I mean, they're keeping plastic surgeons busy. Men seem to love them, as long as there's not a baby attached to it.
Oh, I love how you put that. Well, we could say that men are the big babies. I don't know. You know, it's the split. It's the women are not allowed to be bare-breasted or show nipples, you know, in public, and men can go without a shirt anywhere in the United States. It's only the United States, by the way. I mean, this is not a phenomenon all over the world. It's North America. Let's just put it like that. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about South America, but I know about South Africa, and I know about Australia and New Zealand. I know about Europe. I've been on naked beaches in Mexico. I've been in naked beaches in Jamaica. I mean, it's really the North American way. Mm-hmm. That's so, although I'll make a caveat here about Montreal, which is that Montreal Isle, the center of Montreal, was founded by four people who came to this country from France because of sexual freedom. Like, they came there to get sexual freedom. And there's a whole story about that that I became privy to about a year ago. Mm-hmm. Not such in the United States, though. So it's the same split. It's, if I can keep you separated from your head from the rest of your body, I, whoever I am, can control you. And you will do as I say if I'm the head of the religious faction or what have you. You will do what I say, and you will feel ashamed and cover up that your precious parts of your body that even are meant for food. Mm-hmm. Now that's hysterical.
I think that's hysterical. Maybe we should get some men some hand massage or vibrators and cure that one. But you know what? It's not just breastfeeding. You know, there's so many laws being passed against women's freedom, you know, a freedom of choice, freedom to have children, not have children. I've interviewed women's groups from childless by choice to abortion groups. And I don't know. I think it might come down to some sort of fear of women's power. What else could it be?
Well, it's probably that. I mean, we could say that it's that. We could also say that there's this, women traded their power for security a long, long time ago. When women bought into the notion of marriage, mm-hmm. I think they made a sort of universal pact to trade off one thing for another. They wanted to make sure that whoever had sired the child they were having would come back from hunting and take mm-hmm. care of them and what have you. So marriage came into effect. I don't know what year marriage came into effect, but I think women traded their power for a code of ethics written by men. And mm-hmm. so this is one of the codes that was written into law.
Right.
And it has to do with ownership of property, offspring, all of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's high time that people question all of that.
Absolutely. I mean, there's one of my favorite little jokes I say every now and then. When you look at what some women are married to, you realize how much they hate working for a living. And, you know, I mean, you can look at Donald Trump. If that guy didn't have money, I'm sorry, he would never get laid, okay? But his money right. can get him the most beautiful women in the world, and, you know, like some people would call that, you know, a double bagger ceremony. You know, one bag for his head, one bag for yours, in case yours breaks.
You know, we were talking about this last night, I think, and that is how he's so against immigrants coming to this country, and yet he always marries foreign women. Like, what's that about?
Well, what would an American woman in their right mind would want him? I mean, to me, it's so crystal clear that he needs one bride to order. You know what I mean? They had some kind of series. I don't know who told me to watch it, and it was pretty bizarre. It was a British series of these men that travel to Russia to buy wives. And there's a lot of American men on the trip because they say American women are too bossy. They don't take orders. They're not what they're looking for. So they go over to Russia on this buy a wife junket. And I got to tell you, it was hilarious because most of those men came home totally disgusted and tried to beg their old American girlfriends to take them back. So I would say that's the ultimate power, that, you know, once American women started empowering themselves and whether we were forced to go to work or not, a lot of male ego died, which I'm sure affected what was happening in the bedrooms of across America. Mm. But to me, marriage should be a choice, but it should be an educated choice. People should know that it's a partnership. It's not indentured slavery on either person's part. It's a partnership. You love somebody, you want to get married. Listen, myself personally, I don't really care for the concept, okay? But again, we go back to, I'm sure you learned the same thing that I did when we were kids. Honesty is the best policy. I don't think they teach right. that anymore. And I've been brutally honest. And, you know, I've been married 3 times. And I mean, I was brutally honest all 3 times, telling them, look, marriage doesn't really work for me. But, you know, my last husband was like, but I'm not them. I'm different. Well, come to find out, no, you weren't. Okay. And, you know, he was 8 years younger, and he was like a dead man at a certain age. And I was like, oh, my God, what do I have to do? Start hanging out at the schoolyards? I mean, I was in my sexual prime. But that was, you know, that was even looked down upon as if there was something wrong with me. And I said, no, the only thing wrong with me is expecting you to fulfill my needs when I should be the one taking care of my own needs. And that didn't go over too well.
Mm.
But you look at monogamy and, hey, if it works for certain people, that's great. But if it doesn't work for you, be honest with your partner before you decide to get married.
Well, I personally never made that decision. I never decided to get married. Mm-hmm. So I was raised just like you, but I rebelled against it. I just never saw myself raising children and having a family. I always had a bigger mission, and I just, even when I loved someone, which I've loved many people, mm-hmm. I would look at them, you know, I'd like kind of roll over in bed and go, another 30 years of this one? I don't think so. You know that I don't believe in death, so I didn't know that then, but I just could never do it.
Right.
So I didn't do it. I just didn't do it. I've had, you know, wonderful loves in my life, but I never felt to marry anybody. So I know it's weird, totally weird in this day and age.
No, I don't think so, because I don't see so many people getting married. I think the marrying industry is suffering terribly. Because people, especially millennials, you know, they really disregard all the programmings here, and I love them for that. But to me, when I look at monogamy and marriage, generally, especially in my day, If you were 18 to 20 years old, you were getting married. And when you get married to the supposed love of your life, what do you really know at 18? The priest tells you, you know, kiss your bride and happily ever after for the rest of your life. This is the only person you're ever going to have sex with. I think that that is an unrealistic demand of anybody 18 to 20 years old. So then you have the jealousy and the threats and, you know, the cheating and all of this. But, hey, bees get more variety than humans.
Well, I want to tell you something that may be shocking. That is that the statistics that are about arranged marriages in countries like India mm-hmm. are much higher for happy and satisfied matrimonial life than people who select their partners out of based on love.
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. You know, when I was a mm-hmm. kid, I didn't agree with it because we were that first generation. You know, we were the baby boomers. We were going to do it mm-hmm. our way, not the way our parents or our grandparents did it.
Exactly.
You know, for me, you know, as an Italian-American, to date a real WASP, wow, that was like a dream come true because up to my generation, your parents were picking your partner and he was going to be, yo, Tony from down the street, you know. But now mm-hmm. as I got older, I realized those arranged marriages are based on commonalities, which makes it a whole lot easier to, as my mother used to say, you can learn to love him. And I think it's those commonalities, once the big sexual rush is over, you have all those other things in common. Where if you're just sexually attracted to someone, that's going to make a very difficult marriage because people don't even talk about their differences in politics, money. There's so many other things in a relationship that need to be in alignment. So, no, I'm not shocked by that. I actually think it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Now yeah, I think of it.
It's amazing. And also the concept that there's only one.
Well,
you know, there's the soulmate. I think people are very discouraged and disheartened these days. I did an interview with somebody recently, and we talked about it on my show, mm-hmm. Where we talked about how people are so discouraged and storing the hurts inside themselves based on this notion that they're looking for this one soulmate.
Well, I think we have the new age teachings to blame for that, okay? Because
mm-hmm.
everybody has such a misconception about a soulmate. And the truth of the matter is, Lori, you and I are soulmates, or you and I would not be talking right now. And I try to explain this to people very simply. There are 7+ billion people on this planet. The most popular person might meet 10,000 people in their lifetime. That's your soul group. Every member of that group is a soulmate of yours, okay? Because I believe souls travel in packs, okay? That means your mailman, the guy you talk to is bagging your groceries, okay? Every guest I've ever had on my show, or every listener that's connected to me, every client. Otherwise, how do we find each other out of 7.5 billion people? But the new age people wanted you to believe there's just the one. He's your soulmate or she's your soulmate. This is your soul twin. Selling you the same thing religion sells you in a different package.
Right, right.
Lori, we have to take a short break.
Okay.
We got so busy talking. While I'm taking the break, if you want to skitter over to Lori's, I have quite a few sites for her. Get over, check out butterflyworkshops.com. Transformation through pleasure. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Tantra, something most people have no clue about. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Spiritual professor is a name some of Maria's students and clients refer to her as. After a consultation or class with Maria, some have gone as far as calling her the Force or the Oracle. Maria is simply a woman, a mother, and grandmother who was born with a keen natural intuition. She's got a lot of life experience and she's a constant student herself. This is what qualifies her to help those who are on their journey and need some direction. Some students visit her in person, others on the phone or on Skype. Maria will work with you on your own timeline, guiding you down your best possible path. You can learn to balance the mind, body, and spirit in what seems to be a world gone mad. As David Icke says about Maria, Maria's the real deal, extremely intuitive but with her feet firmly on the ground. Out there, but down here, no bullshit. Whatever you need in this part of your journey is what Maria will help you with. She'll give you the tools you need to make the rest of your life the best of your life. See private consultations with Maria on the site at meria.net and pick the one that resonates with you. You are not alone. The professor is in at maria.net. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to the Sex and Happiness Show, which happens to be the name of Lori's show at webtalkradio.net. Lori also does workshops, as I had given out that website, butterflyworkshops.com, and she seems to be quite expert in something most Americans don't know anything about, Tantra or Tantric sex. So what is it? And let's get into it.
Okay, well, when I learned about Tantra, I learned that it was translated as expansion through awareness. So that meant the more aware you become of yourself and your inner and your outer present to what's going on inside and outside, you will expand. To me, that's too woo-woo. So then I named it transformation through pleasure. If I can expand myself to have pleasure in my body and pleasure in my life, and I can actually look at everything that I have going on is pleasurable to me, or else I wouldn't feel it, do it, be it, commit to it, take it on, what have you. So now I could take responsibility for my life. Mm-hmm. So Tantra, basically, those are the explanations of it. And that may or may not mean something to somebody listening. I'll put it like this. It's not rocket science. It's breathing, sound, and movement. So I already gave a clue to it earlier in the show. I told people to breathe and make sound. Right. So we learn Tantra through breathing, sound, and movement. And we coordinate it with various body parts, the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system. And we run energy. Everyone knows that we're energy bodies. We're made of energy, light energy. And so we take our sexual energy, which is the energy of creation. We talked about it earlier about artists. Mm-hmm. And we run that energy up and down the body and around and around. And then when we connect with another person, intimately, we run energy between us. And we know, and we learn how to do that. And that takes us to a different realm. So let me just say this. There are four kinds of sex. There's procreation sex, which is to make babies. Mm-hmm. There's recreation sex, which is to pick somebody up somewhere and go home with them or go to a hotel or whatever and have banging sex and call it a night. Those are the two kinds that most people know about. In Tantra, there's two other kinds of sex, and most people don't, they might experience it once or twice, but they don't really know of it consciously. And that's restoration or restorative sex, which when you have it, makes you feel totally rested, like you've been on a vacation. And you can have that with yourself or with another. And then there's transformational sex, which enables you to feel like you're traveling in the cosmos with a partner, but you don't feel any differentiation between you and the other person. There's a total melting of yourself and then a melting of yourself into the universe. And that's a tantric experience that people, you know, would most talk about. That's what Tantra enables us to do.
Right, to literally become one and just pop on out into the universe and share the same mm-hmm. experience. And, you know, I've been very fortunate to experience that. I have a great sense, you have too. But, you know, as a Reiki master, what I found is most Reiki books will not ever talk about the benefit of Reiki in your sex life. It's almost as though even that took on that new age connotation that let's not talk about sex and sexual pleasure. But if you have two Reiki masters working together and making love together, it's very easy to achieve that orgasm. So I think that in a lot of ways, people are trapped in their bodies. They're trapped in their head and their body without forgetting that their soul is also along for the ride when that's happening. Obviously disappointed a lot of the time.
Yeah, people are disappointed a lot of the time, and they don't know any better. They seriously don't know any better, but it's really so easy to do a little bit of study.
Well, and I know this is something that you do. It's something that you work with people on. I've read up a lot of your workshops that you do in beautiful places. One of them, I think, was tantrictourist.com. How does that, if somebody comes on one of your trips, let's just single that out for now, and let's say it's a week long, what's the difference between when they first arrive and when they leave?
Oh, my God. Well, it depends on the trip, but they could say that everything is transformed. Like they develop a relationship with themselves. They stop feeling ashamed. They stop feeling embarrassed and guilty. They can let go of, I teach people many processes to let go of stored emotional baggage that has nothing whatsoever to do with the present moment. Mm-hmm. And once they can release that stuff, they can really enjoy themselves. So they come with angst and baggage and shame and all kinds of things, and they leave kind of free, mm-hmm. you know, just free, like able to have what we talked about earlier, an orgasmic life, one that where they could be making love to life. I mean, not everybody gets that. So transformed, but
no, it depends on what they want to put into it, like anything else.
Yeah,
you know, if
exactly.
you don't use it, you lose it, and that's the truth of it. You know, I was very
exactly.
pleased to read the article that you had published. I'm looking in the Elephant Journal.
Elephant Journal, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's excellent. And I'll post a link here today so everyone can read it, because you're very succinct, like I am, and that could be a New York thing, could be a Long Beach thing.
I'm from Oceanside. I just want to tell you.
Oh, one of those. I had a lot of good friends in Oceanside. But it's, you know, five ways to reclaim our pleasure at any age. We live in a society where people are under the impression that sex is just for young people. You know, so if you're, you know, in your 60s or your 70s, listen, I know people in their 80s that are still going at it and, you know, still have the same sexual complaints about their partners that they had when they were 50. Why do you think that is, that people think that, you know, just because you're old, you know, you're over the hill and you shouldn't even have sexual thoughts?
Why do I think that they feel that way?
Uh-huh.
Is that the question?
Yeah, that's the question.
I don't know.
Isn't it crazy?
I don't know why they feel that way. I think it's also part of the cultural... Well, okay. I'll take a stab at it. So, if human beings' life is not valued except to make babies to procreate for the next spreading of the culture or the religion. I mean, if we got down to the baseline of why they're, what promulgates religion or what promulgates society and culture, and we realize that we're instruments to be used by the state, then we're no longer valued or viable when we're above a certain age. Mm-hmm. So people buy into that. They retire. They say, oh, this, I'm getting old and this is breaking and that's breaking. You know, that's only for the young. That's for the youth. They're in the mental set of starting to die off, mm-hmm. because one, Mother Nature is going to take them off, or two, the society is going to take them off. They're just not valuing it. That's not, again, this is another American thing that we've inherited, because there's plenty of societies that value their elders,
right.
and their crones, but not America. So we're the dispensable culture. We throw away lighters and pens, and we have a throwaway everything, and we're a throwaway people. So people buy into that, and they think that they're not viable anymore when they become a certain age, when they're beyond baby making. And that is such a shame, because women come into their full sexual power when they're past menopause.
Right.
When they're crones is when they get really juicy.
Exactly. You don't have to worry about getting pregnant either.
Exactly. That's exactly why.
There's the other plus.
They have all this wisdom now, uh-huh. that really needs to be spread. And the only way to spread that is by sharing their bodies. I mean, it's not the only way, but a very powerful way to spread it is by sharing their bodies, because all that knowledge is housed in the body.
Exactly.
So, and that's pretty crazy.
That's why I like to give, you know, young people good information. You know, I mean, I'll find the same young man handsome or attractive as one of my granddaughters will. And I'll always kid them and say, that's what I'm talking about. And they get such a kick out of it. And I keep telling them, I said, listen, on the inside, I'm just like you. It's just the outside that looks older. And
they
really get that. You know, but if you try to explain that to somebody the same age who's already bitching about, you know, I'm getting old, I can't move, I can't do this, I don't want to be around people like that, because they bought into the program.
Me neither.
You know, and to me it's like, you know, just because you're on a diet doesn't mean you can't read a menu. So I've always been very out there. I mean, one of the cutest compliments is my granddaughter was all, Grandma, if I ever get rich, I'm going to buy a big house and you can come and live with me. She says, and I'll have a closet full of men for you to pick and choose from.
That's great.
I thought that
That's
was
awesome.
So cute. But we all have, you know, we have very open feelings about sex. There's never been any shaming in, you know, with my children or my children's children. And I think that that's a much healthier way to be, to know that I have somebody I can go to if I'm in trouble. I have somebody I can go to if I need an answer, and somebody that's not going to judge me on doing something that's perfectly normal.
That's right. That's good. I mean, it's great to have that. It's great to have that. Obviously, you did something right there, you know.
Well, I guess,
Even if your mother wouldn't have agreed, and your mother wouldn't have, nor would mine.
Well, you know, my mother was very repressed, okay? She didn't live at a time where there were any opportunities for women. And I
exactly.
understand that. I didn't understand it when I was a child. I would look at her and think in my head, why is she taking this? Why is she okay with that? Why is she all right with somebody talking to her that way? But as I got older, I realized, you know, women that were born in the 20s, I mean, they had nothing to look forward to except getting married, having children, and keeping their mouths shut. There were no jobs. There was no safety net. There was no welfare. There was no domestic violence shelters. These women had nothing. So, you know, they had to step into that role, and they had to grin and bear it. But their children didn't. So I guess they didn't count on the boomer generation coming in and saying, yeah, I'm not taking any of that crap. So I think I learned through my mother through the world of opposites.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, plenty of people still do take it, though, I have to say. I mean, plenty of people still take it.
Well, that's why I work with them one-on-one, just break them free. Just break them free and say, here's permission. I think most people think they need somebody's permission to live their life the way they want to.
Yeah.
And we're not here to please anybody else. We're here for ourselves. If somebody else benefits from your work, my work, that's great. But we're here doing it because it's what we do. We do it for us first.
Exactly.
And Lori, totally. I could tell you, you're doing it, girl. You're doing it big time and in style. And this has been
Thank
so
you.
Much fun talking with you today. This
Thank
is,
you.
I think it's just perfect timing for Valentine's Day, for everybody listening out there. You know, sit down and talk with your partner. Have a glass of wine. Chill out. and have the talk, okay?
Because right, or come to a workshop.
Yeah,
or Valentine's. I mean, buy each other something different for Valentine's, like come to a workshop where you learn actually how to be pleased. And how to please yourself.
Right. What a concept. And I love it.
So,
you know, check out her site. Check out her trips coming up. Lori's got books. She's got videos. She even has some pretty interesting looking sex toys that you might be interested in on her site. So, Lori, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Maria. Thank you so much. My pleasure.
You're very welcome. Okay, Lori Handlers, and there you have it. So maybe you want to change it up a little bit this Valentine's Day, although I don't believe that every day should be Valentine's Day, which it should. If you love somebody, you got to love them warts and all, but you've got to be honest. Anyway, thanks for listening. I'll see you guys next time. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.